Store and online. Staples.
And this is WMNF in Tampa. Commuter, were you invited to the White House for the big celebration today?
Yeah, weren't you?
No, I didn't get my invitation.
No. I'll call some people I know.
All right. So we're going to hear more Richard Wolf in just a moment. We're trying to raise a lot of money here at WMNF, $220,000 over 7 days. And on this show and on all the other public affairs shows till 1 o'clock, we hope to raise $8,100. So far, we've raised $3,000, so we have about $5,100 to go. We're going to go back to Richard Wolf in about 2 minutes. Thanks to Ginger Noble from Dunedin, just made a $100 contribution. Dana, her husband, made that contribution, I think. And Tom from St. Pete is making $36 donations for the next 5 months, and he's going to take the Pacifica flash drive. Thank you, Tom from St. Pete, and he likes Richard Wolf and Democracy Now. Tom, thank you. That is huge. That really helps us out. So now we're under $5,000 that we need to raise in the next 2 hours. We got an email that says that WSLR, the community radio station in Sarasota, also carries Richard Wolf. So that's we'll make that correction gladly. Thank you very much. Sean, we've got to raise $5,100. Yeah, well, now a little less, about $4,900, and we'll be there. 813-238-8001.
We need to hear from Richard Wolf fans. Are you out there? Do you support this? You know, a lot of people might get uncomfortable that there's an economist who isn't an adherent to the free market religion, I guess it is. You know, he talks about things like socialism. An economist talking about socialism on your radio station. What's going on with that? You know, if that's something that you think is palatable, if you think that that's maybe something that you could use to expand your horizons, give us a call, 813-238-8001, or donate online at WMNF.org on our secure website.
All right, we want to make sure that Richard Wolf reaches his goal. Thanks to Patricia Callahan from Tampa, $30 contribution. Thank you, Patricia. And Hal Gillette, $100 contribution, taking the MNF summer t-shirt, likes Richard Wolf's show, and he's now spelling a commuter with three F's. So I guess there's no longer an F shortage. We thought there was an F shortage. 813-238-8001.
It's a plethora of Fs.
We're going to go back to Richard Wolf in just 1 minute, but I just want to say that we now have a challenge from the Patterson Foundation in Sarasota, and for the next hour, if we can get five $100 contributions, every one of those $100 contributions or more will be matched by the Patterson Foundation. So that's the latest challenge. And remember, overall, we have to raise about $4,900 in the next 2 hours. We know you love this show. Richard Wolf, he's been a guest on my radioactivity show. So let's see if we can get these last $4,900 raised. 813-238-8001. And remember, if you donate $100 right now, your contribution is going to be doubled. Here is more.
And you can spell Wolf with as many F's as you want. Right, just give me a call at 238-8001.
You can call me Ray. You can call me Jay, right?
Well, that's what Gillibrand, Booker, and Sanders are proposing again. And let me drive home the economics of it. When a person goes to work for a private employer, the name of the game is you produce, as a worker, more than it costs the employer to get you to come there. That more is called profit. And it is pocketed by the employer. That's why he hires you. He pays you $20 an hour because whatever it is you add to his output to sell, each hour that you work is worth more than $20. So he sells it, gets, let's say, $25, pays you the $20 he owes you for your labor, and keeps the other $5. You produced it, you just don't get it. Who gets it? The owners of the business, who divide it up amongst themselves, pay off the big executives. You know the story. Well, if you don't do that, suppose the government comes in. The government hires you, pays you, let's say, the same $20. You produce $25 per hour for the $20 you get. Now, who gets the extra $5? Well, there are no employers in the private sense, so the government takes the money. And what does the government do with the money? The answer is it provides public services, or it can lower everybody's taxes because it doesn't need to tax us since it's picking up the profit that is being produced by all those public employees. We, the people, win. We win by having unemployed people be productive. They win because they have decent jobs, can keep their homes, and all the rest. And then we win again because the profits of workers in the public sector can reduce our taxes or provide more funds for public services. Not to do that is a strange decision and depends only on the political muscle of private enterprises. They don't want it. And you know why? Because if you understand it, if you actually live in it, and you know what it works like, you would scratch your head and you would say, why are there any private enterprises taking the profits workers make and giving it to a few people rather than making it available to everybody in the form of reduced taxes or enhanced public services? They don't want that process to get going. They don't want people to think like that. They want to keep the profits that we all help to produce in the tiny number of hands of those who own and direct American businesses, and we shouldn't be fooled to imagine it's anything else. Next update. The Catholic University in Washington, D.C. is moving forward, it was announced, with its plan to, and I'm quoting now, enhance the university's prestige and control its costs. And the way it's going to do that is it's going to be firing tenured professors. Now, I should explain. When you get what's called tenure in the teaching profession in the United States, it basically means that you cannot be fired. You have enough confidence expressed in you by your colleagues and the administrators of your institution that you cannot be fired unless the need for your services disappears, they close a department, or there's a financial emergency, or you have misbehaved in some egregious way. But barring those, you have that job until you retire. That's what tenure means. So it's a big step for any university, such as Catholic University in Washington, to say it's not going to respect tenure, and not declaring a financial emergency, they have not done that, but simply to, as I'll quote again, enhance the university's prestige and control its costs. The professors, as you might guess, are a bit troubled by this situation. Those with tenure thought they had job protection. They're being told they don't. Why the Catholic University would want to do this, I will leave to your imagination. I don't know. But I want to raise the fundamental issue here, very fundamental in the United States. Professors are excluded at the Catholic University, and indeed at most universities, from participating in the management of the university. Professors' job is to come into the classroom, teach, work with their colleagues to manage the curriculum. That's it. They don't participate in, or to be blunt, they are excluded from managing. And this raises a question, because how the university was managed by people excluding professors clearly led to the current situation where they need to enhance their prestige and control their costs. Obviously, they didn't do enough of that before. So now they want the professors to take a cut in their security because non-professors messed up their jobs. Well, I would suggest to you, you can't have it both ways. If you want professors to be taking it on the chin because, quote unquote, the university needs it, then you've got to let the professors in on all the decisions that led to this circumstance. Otherwise, you have one group of people making the decisions and another group of people paying the price when they don't work. And of course, this isn't unique to a university. It's what goes on everywhere. The boss makes the decisions and one day tells you, gee, we have to lay you off. Well, it turns out they have to lay you off because they made the wrong commodity, or they made it in the wrong way, or they put the wrong equipment into it, or they used the wrong materials, or they messed up the technology. All the decisions from which workers are excluded lead to that moment when there's a crisis and the workers are told they've got to take it on the chin too. Well, if you want the workers to bear the costs of mistakes, they have to be in on it. Otherwise, to coin a phrase famous from American history, you're going to have taxation without representation. Remember, that's what they threw the boxes of tea into the harbor at Boston many years ago. That's what the real Tea Party was about. You cannot impose burdens on us if you exclude us from making the decisions that led there to be a need for burdens. You can't have it both ways. But capitalism is a system that tries to have it both ways. Exclude the mass of working people from all the key decisions and then make them pay the price when those decisions have been made badly. It's a profound reason why it's time to think about the basic slogan, we can do better than capitalism. Thank you very much for your time. We've come to the end of the first half of this program. Please stay with us after a short interlude. We will turn to the second half of the program. Welcome back, friends, to the second half of Economic Update. It is with real pleasure that I welcome to our program a friend of mine, someone I work with from time to time, and each time I'm glad I have the opportunity. His name is Chris Hedges, and my guess is many of you know his work already. But just to remind you, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, the New York Times best-selling author, former professor at Princeton University, activist, and
We're going to hear Chris Hedges in just a moment. This is going to be incredible. Stick around for that. Chris Hedges, always very provocative and interesting. So we're hoping that you will call up and support Richard Wolf in Economic Update. We're going to hear the whole program today, but we have about a half an hour to go. The number to call, 813-238-8001. Since this morning, we've gotten a lot of challenges. In fact, there's a challenge on the table right now that says that if in this hour we can get five $100 contributions, we will get an extra $500 from the Patterson Foundation. We've got a lot of great ways to thank you, including the Pacifica Radio Voices That Changed the World flash drive. This is a small, tiny flash drive that has 1,350 hours of content. You can plug it into your computer, your laptop, your Blu-ray, or a compatible device, and hear interviews and speeches and documentaries about George Carlin, Molly Ivins, Alan Watts, James Baldwin, Bob Dylan, Jim Morrison, Martin Luther King Jr., and hundreds of more people. And even Richard Wolf is on this flash drive. He likes, it's a cast of thousands. 813-238-8001. That's the phone number to call. Commuter, who do you have to thank?
I got to thank Jay Ullman in Sarasota. Very generous. $10. I love Richard Wolf with five F's and all the national coverage that you guys bring.
There's an arms race. There's an F arms race going on.
And Patricia Smith in Newport Richie.
Thanks, Patricia.
Going to get that new T-shirt, and she's going to give us $100.
Thanks, Patricia. So that's our first $100 donation to get the match. All right. And Sean, do you have somebody?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Melissa from Sefner with a $10 donation. And I believe that that means that we did get
the
$10 donations.
Yeah, thank you.
So we get that extra $50. So thank you to everyone who helped meet that match. Now we need to hear from you. Do you support Economic Update? Are you a fan of Richard Wolf with however many Fs? Give us a call, 813-238-8001.
And I look it up on the big board there, and I see that there are no lines lit right now. So you all the phone answers are ready and waiting for you to give us a call at 813-238-8001.
And if you're one of those people, people that wants to avoid talking to any human being, you can donate online. Go to our secure website. Go to WMNF.org and make your contribution there. We are going to hear this Chris Hedges interview that Richard Wolf did. Chris Hedges did a great book a few years ago about economic zones and zones that are throwaway zones. And one of the places he came to was South Florida. He went to Immokalee. And Chris Hedges is a great journalist. He's covered wars for many publications, including the New York Times, and lives now in Princeton, New Jersey, works with prisoners a lot, too. But Chris Hedges is one of the brightest people out there, and we're going to hear what he has to say in just a moment. 813-238-8001.
Dane Peterson, Plant City, going to get a T-shirt. Keep up the great work. Loves Richard Wolf. Getting the T-shirt, $100. That's Wolf with two Fs.
Okay, so he's a traditionalist. Yes. So we're going to go back and hear more of Richard Wolf. Remember, during this show, we want to raise $3,000. We're not there yet. We'd like to get hear from 15 more people, and we will raise the $3,000 while Richard Wolf is on the air. 813-238-8001. And we just need three more $100 contributions, and we'll get that $500 donation.
Is that you? Can you make a $100 donation? 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org. Please support Economic Update on 88.5 FM. You know you listen to this show as often as you can. If you get great information from the economist Richard Wolf. 813-238-8001.
Let's go and hear more of today's economic update with Richard Wolf. Now he's about to interview Chris Hedges, the great journalist. We're still 15 calls away from reaching the goal while this show is on the air. So we are in a little bit of a lull because nobody's calling in. Let's see if we can get one call at 813-238-8001. Here's Richard Wolf.
And ordained Presbyterian minister. He has a long list of books he's published. I would guess the most famous is the book called Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt, but many others. He writes a weekly column for the website Truth Dig in Los Angeles, and he hosts his own show, On Contact, on RT America. Chris spent 2 decades as a foreign correspondent in Central America, the Middle East, Africa, and the Balkans. He has reported from more than 50 countries during his work for the Christian Science Monitor, National Public Radio, the Dallas Morning News, and the New York Times. Indeed, in the New York Times, he was part of a team of reporters that was awarded a Pulitzer Prize in 2002 for coverage of global terrorism. He's taught at Columbia University, New York University, Princeton University, and the University of Toronto. He left the New York Times after receiving a formal reprimand from the newspaper for publicly denouncing the George W. Bush administration's invasion of Iraq. Given everything at the time and since, this would be a badge of honor if there was honor involved in any of this. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome you to Chris and Chris to the audience.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming, Chris. So let me jump right in. We are experiencing extraordinary levels of inequality in the United States, instability, change, turmoil, and now on top of it, the Trump administration's imposition of an extreme right-wing agenda. Do you believe, and you, I know you travel a lot, you talk to a lot of people, are we approaching a kind of tipping point, crisis point? Do you have a sense of an impending explosion or implosion as the end game of all of this?
Yeah, but Trump is not the genesis of our problem. We live in a system that Sheldon Wolin calls inverted totalitarianism, and this is spelled out in his last book, Democracy Incorporated. And it's this sense of, you know, the corporate coup d'etat, that it's not traditional totalitarianism where you overthrow a system and replace its iconography and language, and it revolves around a charismatic leader, but it's through the power of the anonymity of the corporate state. It's where economics takes precedence over politics. Fascism, for instance, politics would take precedence over economics. And so the facade is like the late Roman Republic. The facade remains. I mean, the Senate under Augustus is still, in theory, operating. The Senate operates under Nero, Caligula, Commodius. All of the late Commodius kind of reminds me of Trump. And so Trump is the product of a failed democracy. Trump is the product of a system that has been seized by a tiny corporate cabal and administered by mandarins or courtiers in the Republican and Democratic Party. So Trump is the symptom, not the disease. He's what dysfunctional societies always cough up. And I covered the war in the Yugoslavia, in the former Yugoslavia. And you saw in the late 1980s the economic collapse of Yugoslavia, in part fueled, of course, by the international banking that wouldn't allow them to restructure their loans. Tito had taken out massive loans that everyone knew he could never repay, but he was useful as a buffer state. So you had hyperinflation, huge factory closures, in essence, deindustrialization, and you vomited up these figures like Slobodan Milosevic or Franjo Tuđman or others. And that's where we are. So Trump is extremely dangerous, not because he has any ideology. He has none. But within that ideological vacuum, you are watching the Christian fascists, the Christian right, essentially fill or create an ideological symptom, a system that Trump is very willingly serving. And they have a base. They have Liberty University and TBN and I speak as a seminary graduate and now an ordained Presbyterian minister. I wrote a book called American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War in America. I didn't use the term fascist lightly. They are heretical. They are Christian heretics. They did what the German Christian Church did under the Nazis, which is fuse the iconography and language of Christianity with the iconography and language of the state, or in the case of the Nazi Party. So what we are waiting for and what we're going to get, people like you speak about it, is at some point another financial meltdown. This time around, they don't have plan B because they can't lower interest rates anymore. They're already at zero. I mean, we had cases in Europe where they're actually negative. They would pay you to borrow money. So, and at that point, I mean, these societies that devolve into these monstrosities, as we saw in Yugoslavia or as we saw in Weimar, they need a crisis of that magnitude. And then what I worry is that we bring up that's when the political freaks really come out and we begin to see empowered people who are even more dangerous and less clueless and less benign. I mean, Trump will look sagacious, kind of wise by comparison. And this is why Noam Chomsky, I think correctly, says don't be careful wishing for the impeachment of Trump because Pence is worse, and he's right.
Tell me, let me jump a little bit. This word fascism gets used lightly, easily. You just said you didn't do that. Do you think a fascism is underway here? And I mean fascism in the traditional German and Italian notion of the big businesses and the state literally fusing to manage each other in some sort of way.
No, because under Italian and German fascism, there was an uneasy relationship with the state. So when the Nazis came to power, and I would argue that, Wall Street, they find Trump an embarrassment. How can you not find him an embarrassment? And yet, he did do what the fascists did, both in Italy and Germany, is they went straight to the centers of power and said, what do you want? And what they wanted was the destruction of Dodd-Frank, not that it's particularly useful, massive tax cuts, which they got, and deregulation of everything, of the fossil fuel industry, the financial industry, and that's what Trump gave them. And then the military. He gave them a 10% budget increase, even though they never asked for it. And he gave them carte blanche to run our overseas military projects. And that's, you look back, I don't want to call Trump Hitler because he's not. They're very different. But Hitler did the same. I mean, the Wehrmacht couldn't stand the brown shirts. And so he got rid of the brown shirts. Krupp, I.B. Farben, very uneasy with the Nazis. But I think that power now Trump doesn't come from a party the way the Nazi Party or the way the black shirts were in Italy. So it's different. Power really does rest now completely in the hands of corporate America. And so the proper term is probably Sheldon Wolin's inverted totalitarianism, but it's, I would argue, a species of fascism. And I talked to Wolin before he died, and Wolin said that the great kind of the way you buy off the populace is through cheap consumer products produced in sweatshops overseas and access to easy credit. Well, that access to easy credit is gone, partly because of the trillions in bailouts. The money does have to be paid back, even though it's 0% interest. And of course, they do it by forcing us into debt peonage. So your credit card is late. Next thing you know, you're paying 28% on it. It's all the medical costs, all the ways they have to extract money from us. So the danger, I think, that we face comes when that debt bubble implodes. Student debt is, over $1 trillion? And eventually it implodes.
Well over, yes.
And then the rage is already powerful. And I should throw in that, we're watching the Democratic Party commit political suicide by refusing to address the issues that gave rise to Trump and the insurgency of Bernie Sanders. And so the Democrats are worrying about messaging instead of worrying about social inequality, chronic unemployment and underemployment, student debt, a collapsing corporate-run healthcare system, which no one can afford. They won't address any of them. Raising the wage, which wages since the 70s have declined or remain stagnant, they won't address any of those issues, and that's because they are an appendage of the corporate state. Figures like Schumer, Pelosi, Perez, Obama, the Clintons, they wouldn't exist without this money and an elite party structure within the Democratic Party that is deeply anti-democratic. I mean, people are kind of brought out as props at the convention, which is just choreographed, Disneyland-like. It has no actual resemblance to a political convention, and I would argue the Democratic Party is not a real political party. So we are standing on the precipice. And the inability on the part of the left, once again, we're watching the left put their faith in the Democratic Party. I mean, how many decades of betrayal do they need? I mean, to figure out who these people are. So, yeah, I'm very worried. It is coming, and we haven't even spoken about climate change, which we're all pretending doesn't exist. So it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough.
All right, let me pick up. You're a journalist. What role in all of this is played by the mass media in the United States? Is there any opposition within them that you see or that you see emerging? Is it, where does Trump's manipulation of the fake news phraseology fit into all of this?
Well, Trump and the commercial media are in a symbiotic relationship. The entities like CNN or MSNBC, they're making more profits than they've ever made in the Trump reality television show. The fact that he is unpredictable, the fact that he is vulgar, the fact that he is paying off porn stars, and they love it. And so they function as courtiers in Versailles, gossiping about the proclivities and habits of the monarch. Let's take Louis XIV, because he was worse than Louis XVI, with all of his mistresses. And that's what they do. But you have a majority of this country that is suffering in real pain. And I would argue being oppressed by the very institutions that Trump attacks. So the inability on the part of the Democratic Party to respond, I would argue, rationally to what's happening, and the kind of cruel tweets and taunts and insults that Trump spews forth through his Twitter account or when he's interviewed, it does play to a people who, one, have been betrayed, who are still being betrayed, and who hate this system. And they have every reason to hate this system. And the failure on the part of progressives or the left to run a counter-narrative, and I would argue that's what happened after the 1929 crash in Weimar, because everyone forgets, although the Social Democrats were in power, what did they do? They imposed austerity. They stopped paying unemployment insurance. The Nazis were polling in single digits in 1928. By 1930, they had, what, a third?
Yeah,
a third of the Reichstag.
Pushing to the half in the popular vote.
And then they had the communists and the social democrats who couldn't make a coalition. So, you know, history wasn't, you know, it doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. I can't remember who said that. Mm-hmm. But it does. And Yugoslavia would be another example. So we live in a system of political paralysis whereby all institutions of government and power are directed towards enriching that corporate cabal, which means that they are not responding at all to even the most basic needs and rights of the citizenry. And that is just unsustainable. And when we hit a moment of crisis, an economic, let's call it economic implosion, then you will find the most basic, I mean, garbage collection. I mean, just nothing will be, I'm very worried.
Tell me about the non-sustainable.
We're going to get back to this interview with Chris Hedges, who's a former journalist, now an ordained minister, talking with Richard Wolf on the program Economic Update. And we're going to try to raise some money here. We have a goal of this hour to raise $3,000. Sean Canan is here, and so is a commuter from hell. And we're trying to raise... Yeah, I said that, didn't I?
Yeah.
So we're trying to raise $3,000. Well,
that's Mr. Hell to you.
Well, Richard Wolf is on the air. You know, this is deadly serious. We're listening to this deadly serious Chris Hedges interview, and we're all raptly tuned into this here at the Air Studio. And then I look over to my friend, the commuter, who's one of the funniest guys on the planet. And, you know, it would be interesting to have you interview Chris Hedges. You know,
oh, wow.
I
would love that.
That would be like, atomic explosion or something. Yeah. Hey, thanks to Bob and Ann McLean from Brooksville, made a $50 contribution. Bob and Ann love Amy and Richard Wolf. Thanks, Ann, for that nice contribution. And Sean, we needed to hear from five people donating $100 or more this hour. And if we do that, we will get an extra $500.
Well, here's one. John Barnhart from Tampa has increased his Circle of Friends donation by another $10 a month. He's getting the Pacifica Radio Voices That Change the World flash drive. He loves the station, especially Richard Wolf. Rob Lori's a local treasure. He loves the Saturday shows as well. So thank you for that donation, John. Now we need to hear from you, 813-238-8001.
And I'd like to thank Tom and Lucy Dent, delivering more great food, which they do every day. And thanks to Lucy for cooking it, and Tom, who delivers the food every day of the drive. So there you go.
Yeah, they have been great supporters for years and years. Well, you know, we're going to go back to Economic Update in just a moment. This show is not supposed to work on the radio. Having an economist host a weekly show is supposed to be one of the driest, most boring things that you could hear on the radio. But it turns out that Richard Wolf has just an amazing way to explain the current conditions in the United States. And then he brings on great guests like Christopher Hedges. And if you appreciate Hedges and Richard Wolf, then call us up. No matter how you spell Wolf, call us up at 813-238-8001.
You can even spell it with a PH. I don't care. Just pick up the phone, give me a call at 238-8001.
There is a debate here at WMNF. Should we be all local or should we have some national programs on the air? When you call in today, you're saying on to that debate, well, yeah, there are some important national shows that MNF should consider carrying. Certainly Democracy Now! Is one of the best national shows, and you're glad that we carry it. And if you're glad that we carry Richard Wolf, too, who's been a guest on my call-in show, Radioactivity, please call us up at 813-238-8001. We're not getting any phone calls right now. And let's see if we can get that first phone call this break at 813-238-8001. I think this is really an important show. It's a show where you hear some of the smartest people around talking about the current conditions in the United States, saying things that you're not going to get on cable TV. You're not going to see CNN cover this issue tonight. And everybody talks about it privately. You know, 43 or 44% of the American public is just one paycheck away from disaster. That's where we're at. in the United States. So the minimum wage is smaller. It has less buying power than it did in 1968. This is a big issue, and it's talked about here on WMNF. Not many other places talk about it. Richard Wolff talks about it all the time. So if you appreciate Richard Wolff and Economic Update, I hope you'll go to your phone right now and make that contribution. 813-238-8001. We just need 13 more people, Sean, this hour, and we will get the goal for Richard Wolff.
I know there are so many fans of Richard Wolff out there. Every time we bring him to the area, we get a full house, and we, and people, you know, when the show first came on, before it was a regular show, people would, we'd play it once in a while, and people would say, wow, that's a great show. It should be in the regular lineup. And then once it was in the lineup, people supported it really well. We need to know, is the support still there for Richard Wolff? Maybe people are getting tired of Richard Wolff. Maybe this is we have to look at something as a replacement. I'm not sure. I don't know what the answer is. But what do you think? Do you think that Richard Wolff still has a place in the lineup on WMNF? Give us a call, 813-238-8001.
The amazing thing is about Richard Wolff, he's one of the few people out there who's going to talk about the disparity of wages and how we can make that correction. I was reading in the paper the other day, Rob, that Jeff Bezos of Amazon made $120 million. That just one day.
In one day when the stock market went up.
In one day. $120 million. And it's just, you know, it takes your breath away. And how we can allow that kind of a economic structure to even exist.
Well, I wonder how those workers at the Amazon
they're making $10 an hour as a independent contractor. So that means that they don't have any benefits. They don't have anything. And it's almost takes your breath away.
Well, if you enjoy listening to great, thoughtful people like Chris Hedges on Richard Wolff's Economic Update, we got to get at least one phone line lit. Suddenly, nobody's calling in at 813-238-8001. But there's so many good people listening to Richard Wolff. I know you're out there, and I know you love the show. You're looking for a reason to do it. Well, we need to raise $3,000 while Richard Wolff is on the air, and your call right now could inspire other people to make that contribution. You can get the Pacifica Radio Flash Drive, Voices That Change the World, for a $180 contribution. You can have talks by Medea Benjamin about the U.S.-Saudi alliance. She calls it sinister, and she gives the reasons why the U.S. should not be so close to Saudi Arabia. That's a very interesting talk. Jeremy Scahill's talk, Journalism, Truth or Propaganda. Jeremy is a former staffer at Democracy Now, and he's got a new talk about the state of journalism. You can have that for an $80 contribution. I'm just looking at the phone, Sean, and nobody's calling in, and we could be in big trouble right now if we don't get at least one phone call at 813-238-8001. Less than 24 hours in this fund drive, and we are going to go back to hear more of Richard Wolff's interview with Chris Hedges in just about 90 seconds. But wouldn't it be great to get those 13 calls right now? 813-238-8001.
And you can even get a Richard Wolff speech, Cutting Corporate Taxes, on CD for an $80 pledge. But we do need to hear from you, 813-238-8001.
If you're out there and you're waiting for your for tomorrow to donate to Richard Wolff, or next time we play it, next week, something like that, well, guess what? This is it. This is the very last chance to donate to Economic Update. 813-238-8001. This is the one and only time that we play Economic Update during our week-long membership drive. We need to hear from you. 813-238-8001. Does this show still have support? Donate online at WMNF.org.
How many more calls do we need for the show, Rob?
We need just 13 more phone calls, and we'll be there. Well, let's go and hear more of Democracy of Economic Update, and we promise that if we get these donations, things will go back to normal next week. And you will be able to hear Richard Wolff uninterrupted by these pledge breaks. But these are the times when we thank these people on the air. These are the people that are keeping WMNF going, and we can't thank them enough. All these nice people are making contributions to WMNF. We hope that you're the next good community-minded person that goes to your phone and dials 813-238-8001 to keep great, thoughtful, smart programs like Democracy Now! And Economic Update on the air. Here's more of that interview with Chris Hedges.
Because you might have said it 20 years ago, because much of this was already underway. You might have said it with greater intensity 10 years ago. At what point does your unsustainable literally mean that you can't sustain this way of functioning anymore? Is it that you're waiting for this economic downturn to kind of plunge it?
I don't want to talk economics with you, but the fatal moment is when the dollar is no longer the reserve currency. So we saw what happened in the 1950s when the pound was dropped as the world's reserve currency. The British economy went into a tailspin. Now, the difference is that Britain had been dismantling its empire since the end of the First World War. We have been expanding our empire. And when the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, and let me just throw in there, part of the antagonism with Iran is that they've walked away from the dollar, and now they deal only in the EU currency, in the euro. So that's the fatal moment. And at that point, the economy, imports become incredibly expensive. We can't fund these military operations. Yeah, and then, Wall Street, they can't play this game forever. I mean, it's Marx's fictitious capital. It's making money off of money, and it works for a while, although it's a criminal activity. In the 17th century, speculators were hung, which is, in the 17th century, everyone in Goldman Sachs would have been hung, and Citibank and everyone else. I'm against capital punishment, so I might hang them for a little while and then let them down. But, it's these people, speculators have just seized the economy. And they're looting and making money as fast as they can on the way down. And they're I know some of them. I'm actually related to some of them. They're as cynical as I am. I mean, they are cynical. I'm not, in the sense that they're just pillaging while they can. But they know it's not going to continue.
I talked to some of my classmates because I went to this more or less the same university as you did, and they say to me over lunch, we're grabbing it before it disappears.
Yeah, right.
It's sort of this doomsday notion of them. They too somewhere know it's not sustainable. They don't know what to do with the insight, but they kind of feel it.
Well, they all think they're going to retreat to their gated communities in Vermont, and
or New Zealand.
New Zealand, right? If they're really rich,
further,
or maybe the old missile silos in Idaho, wherever.
Do you see any? What am I going to say? Positives on the horizon? Do you see a mobilization developing? Or anything from the Poor People's Campaign to ecological movements to Black Lives Matter to Bernie? Is there anything you can see in the way of a genuine opposition emerging?
It's not. First of all, it always collapses as soon as the elections roll around and supports the Democrats. Which is utterly counterproductive. I mean, this was my problem with Sanders. So he raises a lot of money, he gets a lot of popular enthusiasm. We're not going to change the system in one election cycle. And so what happens? The Democratic elites make sure he doesn't become the nominee, big surprise, and he runs around telling us we all got to vote for Hillary Clinton. So that's not the way out. I see the strikes by the teachers as hopeful. I think part of the problems with groups like Black Lives Matter, while I fully support them, they've not organized in the sense that they're not grassroots organizations. They will do events. There is, they will do the spectacle of the left. I thought Standing Rock was a good example of the kind of thing we have to do, that sustained civil disobedience rooted in a community, rooted in Native American traditions and religion, which keeps it grounded and nonviolent, which is important. And you can see how the state responds. I mean, if everybody puts on a pink pussy hat and goes to Washington, they don't really care, the state. And so that I was there. I mean, I took part in it. And the cops were kind of friendly, and it was like a big picnic or holiday. But you go to Standing Rock, I was also at Standing Rock, they're furious because you are messing with their economic interests. And there you got over 700 arrests, attack dogs, pepper spray, water cannons laced with pepper spray in sub-freezing temperatures, beatings, heavy infiltration. I mean, over the whole camp all day long were planes circling and filming. And what was particularly frightening is I got there in November, so they were beginning to prepare for shutting it down, and they blocked roads, so we had to go all the way around. But you'd be coming down these dirt roads, and you would run into a checkpoint, but it wasn't police or National Guard. It was people carrying long-barreled weapons you know, in kind of black military outfits with no identification. And they would stop your vehicle and demand to see the press credentials, and then they wouldn't let me through. But I never even knew who they were. They were contractors. They were mercenaries.
Right. Yeah, like they do abroad. All right, I want to tap your international activities. How do you make sense of the on-again, off-again tariffs with China, the off-again, on-again, if I can say it, Iranian manipulations, breaking the treaty? What does this tell us on two particular fronts? Is there a foreign policy here, and what is it in the world, the post-Soviet, post-Cold War? And secondly, isn't there something breaking in the alliance between Europe and the United States that we need to think about?
Yeah, I mean, you see it with the destruction of the State Department, because ideologues like Pence or Bolton, who's a very dangerous figure, these are not people who understand how the world works. They don't deal in nuance. They don't deal with complexity. They are linguistically, cultural, historically illiterate. In short, they're idiots. And they run the place with the idiot in chief. And so, you know, when you have a preponderance of military power coupled with utter idiocy, you lead yourself into some very difficult and dangerous situations. The breaking of the nuclear treaty with Iran was insanity. I mean, Iran was complying. What does this say to the rest of the world? And what's going to say to North Korea if we ever get there? It's going to say that it doesn't matter what you sign. The diminishing or the withering away of diplomacy and its replacement with violence, with force. I mean, we dropped the mother of all bombs, you know, a few months ago, or whenever it was, in Afghanistan, just because they wanted to see what the mother of all bombs did. And we dropped it on a underground tunnel complex the CIA had paid for, probably hundreds of millions of dollars, in the war with the Soviets in Afghanistan. I mean, it's all nuts. But that's kind of what totalitarian societies do. Who was the foreign minister for Stalin? Molotov, who was an idiot, and Ribbentrop, who was a former champagne salesman. I mean, that's kind of where we are. And so that puts us in a situation where, you know, they don't even know how to respond to the rest of the world. And Bolton's quite, you go back and look at his rhetoric, he believes that he is going to, you know, punish or pound the rest of the world into submission. So that's kind of the foreign policy. And this thing, which with Netanyahu egging them on to go after Iran, is really dangerous. Because what people forget is that if you attack Iran, we in the Middle East, and I spent 7 years in the Middle East, that is interpreted in the Middle East as a war against Shiism, not just Iran. 60% of Iraq is Shia. Several million Shia in Saudi Arabia, mostly concentrated in the oil fields, Bahrain, huge Shia population. Not only that, Iran is not Iraq. It would entangle us, I mean, as if we haven't made enough of a mess in the Middle East. And yet, I mean, Netanyahu wants to see Iran bombed into the kind of chaos that the Israelis kind of got us to do in Iraq and Syria. So, and unfortunately, I think the people who, Pompeo and others who now have control, they don't really understand how the world works at all. So in terms of foreign policy, and of course the Europeans are, you know, I don't like Merkel too much, but I mean, you know, she's not insane. Mm-hmm. They're looking across at us and yes. They've kind of already washed their hands of us. I mean, they realize that this is...
Well, where's that going to take the Europe-American deal to kind of carve up the world and manage it? Seems to me that this is...
Well, the Europeans are already in revolt over the Iran deal.
Yeah.
So I think at this point, They're not going to be acting in concert.
And if the United States punishes companies that do business with Iran,
right,
there will be pressure in their own countries.
Yeah.
The government will want to compensate those companies. The mass of people will wonder, we're being taxed to accommodate the United States.
Right.
What? You know, this is a politically unfeasible to manage. I mean,
well, because we don't have any foreign policy, really. It's not articulated in any rational way. It's a knee-jerk, emotionally driven, willfully ignorant. I mean, let's be clear about who's running the country. I mean, you know, these are the people running the country. They're they're, you know, very diminished and impoverished human beings.
It's like having Mr. Giuliani run your legal defense.
Right, that's right. Well, you know, I kind of wish that on Trump.
I kind of wish he'd stick around.
Well, that's Chris Hedges talking with the economist Richard Wolff, and we're raising money here at WMNF, trying to raise $8,100 while the Midday Public Affairs is on the air before 1 o'clock. And Sean Kinnan is here, the commuter is here, and we're going to try to get at least 10 more donations for Richard Wolff right now. This is one of the best shows on WMNF. If you love this show, please call us up because we're still about 10 calls short. We need your help at 813-238-8001. Richard Wolff is going to be back in his regular time slot next week at 10 a.m. But now we're trying to see if there's support out there for this economic message that Richard Wolff brings every week. And boy, this interview with Chris Hedges is really great. You can have Pacifica Radio Voices That Change the World flash drive for $180 contribution. I think there's even a debate on that between Chris Hedges and Christopher Hitchens, who passed away a few years ago. And there, it is really a great debate. You can have it on the flash drive with 1,350 other hours of content for $180 contribution. Sean, do you have anybody to thank?
I do. Wes Owens from Winter Haven donated $25, likes everything about WMNF. Thank you. And Jeff Carroll from Lutz. Thanks, Jeff. He's donating $100 and likes Richard Wolff, Tom Hartman, Democracy Now!, and all the news shows. So does this help us to get closer to our match, or do we already get the 500?
We are one call away, and not counting what Commuter has, but we are one call away from getting the match.
That's great.
And I got to thank Anonymous and Sefner likes Radioactivity with Rob Lori and loves the interviews and live call-in shows and going to give us, you were wrong, Rob. We have made that match.
Okay.
$100 from Anonymous and Sefner, Gateway to Mango, and Jamie Vieira in Seminole. Is $50. Richard Wolff's show is excellent, and everybody needs to hear about it. I couldn't agree with you more, Jamie. Thanks so much for your $50.
All right, so we are on our way, but we still have a long way to go. We have about $4,000 more to raise in the next hour. The number to call, 813-238-8001. If you love Richard Wolff, and if you love this interview, I thought, wow, somebody speaking so plainly and freely with the Chris Hedges interview, then you support this show and support this radio station with your donation. This is how we stay on the air, never commercial here on WMNF, 813-238-8001.
I liked it when he said he likes Angela Merkel because she's not insane.
It's a low bar.
This is really a great program. If you love this program, let us know that you're out there. I think we're now just seven calls away from reaching the goal. 813-238-8001. Here's another call. Thanks to Richard Schaefer from Sarasota. Just made an $88.50 donation. He says, I'm listening to the interview now, and it's great to hear some truth. And only we the people can change things, says William Schaefer. So that means that we need to hear from six more people, and we'll reach the goal this hour. 813-238-8001.
Wow. One line lit. We got plenty of phone answers in the back, but you got to give us a call right now at 813-238-8001.
Is there someone out there who will take the Pacifica Radio Voices That Change the World thumb drive for a $180 contribution? It's 1,300 hours of programming, great programming going back 65 years. We have MLK on there. There's Malcolm X. There's Bob Dylan. Much great music and interviews.
George Carlin is on this. Betty Friedan, Cesar Chavez is on this. Allen Ginsberg. There's four different shows with Bob Dylan. Sarah Vaughan is on this. John Lennon, Rita Mae Brown, Ray Bradbury. There's an entire reading of War and Peace. There is an entire reading of 1984. There's Aldous Huxley, H.R.A.P. Brown, Robert Oppenheimer. There is a Shakespeare play on this. The Ballad of Pete Seeger. There's a whole documentary about Pete Seeger. This is a flash drive featuring some of the voices that have been carried over Pacifica stations over the last 60 years. And you can get this flash drive for $180
contribution. That works out to about a 1.5 cents per hour.
Wow.
If you think about it, that's amazing. Where else, you know, you can't, if you were to buy 1 hour of all of those interviews.
They charge about $60 per CD.
But you think about it, like I said, it's about a penny and a half per hour.
All right, so if you love Richard Wolff, we got three calls coming in, so that means that we need, I think we just need three more phone calls, so we will be there. 813-238-8001. You can also make your contribution online. Go to WMNF.org. Just three calls away from reaching the goal this hour.
We can do that if you make a donation at WMNF.org. You can make a donation on the smartphone app, or you can call our phone answers at 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org. We do need to hear from you now. Are you a fan of Richard Wolff? Do you like the Economic Update program? Call now, 813-238-8001.
Or you can always go to WMNF.org. But however you do it, we need to hear from you right now.
All right. And you can get that flash drive for a $180 contribution that features so many people, including Dick Gregory and Alex Hale and Edward Said and many more. This is WMNF in Tampa.